With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So Celtic are out of the Europa League after a 3-2 loss to Bayer Leverkusen last night. Welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown. Enda Cole here with you, and I'm joined on the line as always by Juco James and Alan Morrison. Lads, how are we getting on?
Hi, Enda. Hi, all. Hi, James.
Hey, guys. I'm exhausted from playing Chef Boyardee yesterday. Thanksgiving. So
was your Thanksgiving spent watching the Celtic game or watching the NFL?
Actually, so I had a bit of a revolt on my hands at the house because I was I tried to put the Rangers game on after the Celtic game, and my dad was ready to go to blows over it. there wasn't any issue with the Celtic game because the competing NFL game was absolute garbage, not a good one. So the second game was a little bit of greater interest. So I relented. I only got to see a little bit of the Rangers game. And then we sat down to eat anyway. You usually eat a little earlier on Thanksgiving just so you can have a second meal and dessert and get completely ridiculously fat and, caloric intake's usually like 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. That's the – and then you end up in a comatose of – I think it's called tryptophan or whatever from Turkey. So everyone, by about 7:30, everyone's laid out and snoring and drooling on themselves. What a great American tradition.
Why not? Listen, so
it's the closest that you have to culture. So listen, we'll give you a pass.
So as I mentioned, Celtic are out of the Europa League after that result. It looked for a while that they could have been setting up a nice little last game in the group stage with Real Betis, but not to be after two late goals from Bayer Leverkusen give them a 3-2 lead. Celtic were in the lead after Jota's, has to be said, lovely goal and Juranovic's penalty. They went 2-1 up and they were really in control of the game for some parts of the game up until about 20 minutes to go. We'll start with, I think, what I feel is the talking point from this game, and that is Ange Postecoglou's substitutions. So as Celtic were 2-1 up, they did make a couple of substitutions, and I'm not too sure they worked, but I'm interested to get your thoughts on it. So for those who weren't watching the game or forget what the substitutions were, James Forrest came off for Lila Bada on 72 minutes, as did Jota, who was replaced by Mikey Johnson. Near Beaton was replaced by James McCarthy on 76. That might have been an injury more than anything. And that was a double substitution as well. Kyogo Furuhashi coming off for Albin Ayeti. So, Alan, I'll let you take this question first. Was that the right call from Ange to make those substitutions? For me, I don't think I would have taken off Jota at that point.
Okay. So, to carry on the Thanksgiving theme and the American football theme, there's an awful lot of Friday morning quarterbacks on this one. Really, I can't get excited about it because people are kind of reacting to me on the outcome, not the actual decision that was made at the time, right? Beaton was injured. He had a head knock. What's more concerning about that is that there's a continuation of the theme of Celtic players getting head blows during games and then not immediately being taken off and then having to go off. You know, and this happened to Lustig, people may recall, a while back. And to me, that's a failure of protocols. They shouldn't be getting into that situation. So Bitton was injured, had to go off. You know, Forrest hasn't played 90 minutes since August, so was always going to be a candidate to be taken off. Kyogo ran and pressed in his usual inimitable style. He averages 74 minutes a game when he was taken off on the 72nd minute. So pretty routine in that regards. And then, yeah, okay, Jota. But again, really, Jota hadn't been in the game apart from his wonderful goal. He hadn't actually been in the game that much. So I honestly struggle for anyone to say that at the time of the substitutions that they had a massive issue with them. Now, did the players that come on actually perform? No. You know, all of them lost the ball. Abada especially had a really bad time of it. Johnson's decision-making was all over the place. I think Ayeti tried manfully, but, you know, again, couldn't impose himself on it. I think McCarthy was probably the disappointing one. But again, that's probably, you know, you may have made an argument for Sorrow, but I think my guess is that Postecoglou's already made up his mind about Sorrow and McCarthy's kind of stuck with. So that kind of makes sense to me in that regard. So I can't get excited about that issue. To me, that wasn't the most concerning part of the evening. And I can't attribute losing the game to that because I think that's just playing with hindsight, frankly.
Yeah. So I guess if you put yourself in the head of Ange Postecoglou, Leila Bada comes on because James Forrest is tired. He hasn't played enough games and he adds a bit of oomph to the team. I would presume Mikey Johnson was brought on to replace the pressing that, you know, Kyogo would have been, we would have been losing with Kyogo a few minutes later when he takes on Albin Ejiati. So I think on paper, they make sense. They just didn't work out for me. And
agreed.
It is I do think it is a big step down in quality between Mikey Johnson and Jota. That's, I think you're getting more composure on the ball. Like Mikey Johnson lost the ball a couple of times. He had a good chance and he just stumbled before he got the shot away. And you're not getting that with Jota. I think you're just not getting those mistakes. James, what did you think? Are you in a similar mind to Alan where you feel that this wasn't a huge issue in the game?
Yeah, so we've talked about this issue of less bad options. So interesting enough, a lot of the narrative I heard coming into this game was we should be focusing on Sunday. The league's more important. The likelihood of us getting through to the knockout stage in Europa League was pretty daunting anyway going into this game. So, you know, should we be flogging these guys on a Thursday ahead of a big league game? With what we know are the injury risks that we've already been incurring the brunt of, and with the squad depth the way it is. So if you kind of step back, I think strategically here, this is without having any understanding or knowledge of what their, you know, what their data that they're getting off of their catapult bras is saying. So again, I don't think most supporters understand the level of which some of this fitness related stuff is being monitored and potentially modeled. We'll see. I don't know how much Celtic's actually doing that, but dealing with risk factors, meaning that if a guy's fatigued, injury risk goes up a lot. And, you know, you could make the argument that, you know, given, as Alan said, with Forrest reintroduction into the squad, with Kyogo coming off of an injury still and having played a lot and his style of play, you know, do you want to be rolling the dice when you're up 2-1? You know, I think it's an indictment of what's going on with the rest of the club with recruitment and such, that we had such a, you know, drop off in quality who was coming on, meaning that I think strategically the decision-making made sense to me. You know, given the lack of quality to come in like for like, you know, do you accept that risk and maybe dropping points that you might have gotten in a group that you may not have qualified for anyway versus injury risk and fatigue risk heading into a big league game on on Sunday. So I generally agree with Alan. I mean, I think it's overblown. I think for the game itself, of course, but yeah. I think there's bigger picture of things here that are make the process reasonable.
Well, let's talk about the other issue at hand there. And I suppose this has been a recurring theme for Celtic in Europe. And largely, I think it's down to the sheer quality of the teams. I mean, if you compare Celtic to Leverkusen, it's the same as if you put a Dundee, or not so much that. It's the same as if you put it like a St. Mirren up against Celtic. They will compete for large amounts of the game, but at some point they will get through if the fitness isn't the same, if the concentration isn't the same. Like, Celtic would have had to be at their very, very best to beat Leverkusen for 90 minutes plus in order to get a win away to Leverkusen. And it's the same as if you take a mid-table Scottish side against Celtic. They need to be at their very best for the entirety of the game to win it. And Celtic don't do that regularly enough in Europe when it comes to these teams. How many times do we see Celtic take the lead in Europe and then fall away in the last 15, 20 minutes? So I'm interested to see what your thoughts are on that. Why is it that Celtic concede so many late goals or go take the lead and then go on to lose the game? It's happened a good few times over the last couple of years. Is it quality? Is it concentration? Is it decision-making when it comes to late on in the game? What's your thoughts on?
Can I interrupt? I'm sorry. I want to clarify something that Enda said just for context, because this is why I came up with all this nonsense with expected trophy models and this Jenga analogy I use, which is to try to have an objective framework for doing that kind of comparison. So you said St. Mirren to Celtic. I think, Celtic have about one third the wage bill of Leverkusen. Okay. St. Mirren is like 6% of Celtic. Right. So there's an order of magnitude here that I think a better kind of analogy, if we're going to use one, would be like the 18-19 Rangers side versus Celtic of that season, meaning that you have about 30-40% of the wage bill. And then obviously there's a huge disparity. I mean, that is a disparity, but the level of disparity is, Leverkusen's about as close to Bayern Munich as we are to Leverkusen, right? So you kind of go up through the levels as far as wage bill disparity. And then that's why the domestic league is such a poor barometer for Celtic outside of Rangers in the last three seasons, really, relative to what we confront in Europe, because it's just, it's a different order of magnitude. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just reaching to see.
No, conceptually, I think you were right. I think it's that order of magnitude I wanted to clarify, because I think it's, again, if you go back to that Rangers side of 18-19, the relative quality over a full season is really where the trouble comes in. In a one-off game, that level of disparity, I mean, we should be doing a lot better versus a team like Leverkusen consistently, is kind of my point. Meaning that I think the level with which we're not competing against teams there, that it's that order of magnitude that I'm talking about. So go ahead. Sorry.
No. I mean, I agree with that. And this is why it's hard for Celtic, to play a team that's literally got, 10% if less of your budget, and then to switch to playing a team that's probably going to be the third best in the Bundesliga. I mean, Freiburg having a great season, but you would probably expect Leverkusen to nestle into third spot there. It's many things. It's all the things you listed. I mean, if we break down the goals that were conceded, because this gives you an indication of the fractions that we're talking about, the margins that we're talking about, even at this, at this level, and actually at all levels, we're not talking about the wage bill. Spending 10% more on your wage bill doesn't buy you 10% more quality. It's not linear. Okay, you can have 40-50% more wage bill to probably improve your team by 5-10%. Let's say I'm making these numbers up, but you get the general point here, right? So the difference in quality between even Celtic players and Leverkusen players is not enormous, but there clearly is a gap there, and the goals kind of highlight that in terms of both the individual players, their decision making, but also the overall organization of the team and its ability to respond to stressful situations. So the first goal, you know, Rolston obviously gets absolutely mugged off by Andrich. You know, he gets you know, taken into traffic, and sorry for those of you that are listening to this, there's some interesting background going on at James's house there. We're not going to get into. So Andrich absolutely mugs him off, steers him into traffic. But actually, the systemic problem, which is an individual error by Rolston, but the systemic problem is that, you know, Leverkusen had cleared the front post area, and Celtic had two zonal players in the front post area. They had McGregor on in front of the 6-yard box, and Juranovic roughly in line with the post. Now those that's fine, and as a setup, that's absolutely fine. But the problem was, Juranovic was probably about 2 to 3 yards too far to the right, because there was such a big gap there. If he just stepped 2 to 3 yards to his right, his right, then he would have been able to have engaged Andrich as he ran in, and the header would have been about 5 yards further out, and he would have been under pressure. And that slight bit of positioning was actually what gave Andrich the opportunity to get essentially what turned out to be a free header against Welsh, who wouldn't even have seen him coming because he came from behind him. The second goal, again, it's late in the game. Players are tired. You've probably got the mindset, we've got to hang on, we've got to defend. And I'm trying to put, I'm trying to explain motivators that are in Ralston's head, which is probably wrong of me. But I can just imagine if I was in that situation, I'd be thinking, keep the centre defended. So Ralston, right, he's drifted into the middle. The ball's on his left. He's drifted into and he's gone too far. He's basically covered overcompensated in the middle. So when the ball gets flicked over to the guy on the Celtic left, Celtic right, Rolston can't close down the cutback quick enough. Then McCarthy, who's just on, is too slow to track the runner. And again, remember, this is a very young, very athletic, very fit team. And those fractions have cost now two goals. And then you look at the last goal. Again, it's nearly the last minute. Everyone's tired. McGregor has been running about all game. Again, they work the ball very nicely to Wirtz, who's a fantastic player, and Wirtz spots Diaby. Now, the reason that Diaby has got a free shot at goal is because McGregor, again, he's just got drawn to the ball and he's just not standing in the right place. He's literally 4 yards away from where he should be. He's got drawn to the ball when he doesn't need to, because he's never going to affect the ball. There's other Celtic players that are doing that job. His job would be to ensure that the danger, which is free players on the edge of the box, are marked out. So we're talking about players being 2, 3, 4 yards out of position on each goal, causing a massive problem. Those are tiny margins, right? And then, of course, what you can't legislate for are the superb finishes from Andrich and Diaby. Diaby's finish was absolutely fantastic. To volley that ball at an angle back across the goalkeeper, full volley, and to keep low and with power, because it didn't even go into the corner, but Hart had no chance. The pace that the guy hit it at. Those are top quality finishes. So that's the difference. That is the difference at the highest level. You won't get away with being 2 yards out of position. You won't get away with a seconds late reaction. And when you do give a chance, the technique is so good that they will take those chances.
Mm-hmm. This is the Huddle Breakdown. We're looking at the Bayer Leverkusen win against Celtic. Celtic now out of the Europa League. A couple of questions coming in, a couple of comments coming in on YouTube as well. There are a few that I'm not sure that I agree with per se. Some people saying that wage bill is no indicator of quality. I think you will find there have been many, many studies that show you that wage bill is first or second in the most important aspects of whether or not a club is successful or not. James, I know you have that to hand.
You're on mute, James.
Depending on the study, I mean, again, there's some variance here, but between 80 to 90% is basically what, if you kind of look
explainability, you mean explainability of results. Yeah.
So there's, and again, that's why I've talked about kind of this silly concept of an expected trophies model that I dreamed up over the last year, is how do you attribute club level performance? And that's where wage bills kind of in that 80, 90%. And then you get into quality of players recruitment, right? So if you think about with that within the Celtic context, you know, the amount of money that's being spent has gone down. The wage bill's been cut. We don't know exactly how much, but it's, I think it's likely to have been material given the exits that we had, you know, the expense of Duffy, the wage that Brown was probably on. You know, you go all through the exits versus the entries, and the likelihood is that the wage bill's down. So if you think about, you know, what that would mean relative to performance, that's a hit, so to speak. Then it's recruitment. Then it's how does the manager leverage those assets or those players within the context of what he has to work with. And that's why I think, as positive as a lot of people have been on Ange, I think they're probably underestimating how much of a difference he's made. Because he's got a lot less quality materials to work with, and a lot of it's been incoherently recruited. So the fact that we're doing what we're doing is almost miraculous, given what he's been dealt.
Yeah, you don't want to say that it's the only reason that Leverkusen beat us. Because if you look at wage bill, like Manchester United have one of the biggest wage bills in England, but none of the parts make sense together and they don't have a manager they can put it together. So it is very important, but also it shows in Celtic's context against a Bayer Leverkusen that how important Ange has, that he has been able to bring the levels closer by what he was able to do. Because Celtic got beat 4-0 by Leverkusen last time round, and this time round it looked like Celtic were going to win it up until the 79th minute mark.
If you look at the actual performance and the issues that Celtic, not just in this performance, but the issues that this Celtic team has structurally, it's remarkable that he's got us to within a few minutes of beating a team of that quality, right? It's absolutely remarkable. You've got a fullback that's horribly exposed at that level in Ralston. You've got a completely unsuitable midfield where you've actually managed to, in the last couple of games, pretty much neuter McGregor, which we all thought he was made for that eight position, but actually his influence has been negligible in the last couple of games. You've got Jota and Forrest, who are not suited to pressing the ball. Turnbull's probably the worst. You've got Bitton, who actually had a great game. I'll come to that in more detail if you want. But he's, in essence, we all can see he's too slow. If they do get bypassed, then he's not recovering, right? We had a really weird... One thing I will put on Ange is that what I didn't understand from last night is why McGregor and Turnbull were playing so wide. They were almost on the touchline every time they got the ball. And that meant that Jota didn't complete a pass until the 15th minute. Forrest didn't complete a pass until about the 18th minute. They never got the ball. They couldn't get them on the ball at all. And then we were too open. We were way too open. If you look at the packing stats a number of times that our midfielders were bypassed by their forward passes, 26, 28, 30 times in the first half. In the first half. Right. If you're being bypassed literally once every, kind of more than once, you know, every other minute, in that midfield, then you're going to have a defence that's absolutely solid, and we know that that isn't the case. And then we come to the issue of the squad depth. So the fact to me that Postecoglou is putting together this run, and the fact that we to me look like a coherent, organised, good team is remarkable given those structural issues.
Yeah, and I apologize for speaking over you there, Alan. Is the other thing that, you know, when I talk about this expected trophies and wage bills, that's over a large sample size of like a season. You know, we always talk about the variance that gets introduced in one-off games. I mean, the underlying performance metrics for this game was not all that different than the 4-0, actually in some ways worse, as you might expect going to Leverkusen, right? So I wrote in my thread this morning in some material ways, like Alan just said, with pack passing. Now, again, I don't have access to his valuable metrics in that regard, but I get his Y Scouts inferior progressive passes, and I benchmark that, and it was the second worst in our attack by that metric. And it was more the other two games that were in that neighborhood was the 5-0 loss to PSG and the 3-0 at Bayern Munich in the 17-18 Champions League group. So, again, and those teams have like 70% more wage bill than Leverkusen. So as much as Leverkusen is a good team, you know, they're kind of okay for Bundesliga standard. I mean, that their wage bill is the third highest, and they routinely are kind of at that level or lower. They very rarely compete for what Dortmund comes in, or, you know, they're not outperforming their financial metrics. They're kind of doing about what you would expect. So in a one-off game, as Alan said, I mean, we almost pulled it out, but there's such fine margins and variance. You know, that Jota finish, for example, was an incredible finish. You know, how often is he going to do that? How often is there going to be a lucky bounce after a guy like Frimpong stumbles in the box that basically facilitated that? And then we get kind of a fortunate penalty because their keeper makes a reckless flopping challenge that the ball gets deflected before it gets to him. Right. So if you just look at how we got those two goals, there was some positive variances, I would say, in respect to, you know, how they came about. And that's normal within games, the game. And that's what happens in games. So, a lot of these things that we talk about are anchored in long term. And then you kind of look at the game to game. And that's why we always say, you know, XG and all these things in one off games, they're not all that material as far as the outcomes come. It's trying to assess longer term trends and put each performance kind of in that context. So that's what's crazy is yesterday was 3-2. We very well could have, or and some would argue should have won it versus the 4-0. And actually the difference between them from an underlying perspective was nowhere near as extreme as the results would suggest.
Before we get into what happens next in the Europa Conference, I do want to hear those underlying numbers from this game, James, if you want to take us through them. But before that, was it a red card for the goalkeeper? Alan, I know you've been following the referees' performances closely this year.
I've because he had a week off because there was no league games, obviously because of the League Cup. So I sent him the I don't know if you saw the footage of the Celtic B game where Hazard got
sent. Well, I mean, come on.
I sent to him, you love this. I sent him that, and he actually wrote me. It was almost like two pages. He was appalled. He said, it's like something, I can't remember the exact quote, but he's like, if you wanted to make a video of how not to referee, that you would show. So he loved that. And I'll post that up, actually, because I know a lot of people were interested in that decision.
That was like one of those glitches in FIFA where
like a software error, wasn't it? Like,
how the hell did he come to that?
even spotted correctly that Hazard didn't even touch him. That's the thing. Goodwill, he clips, you know, does one of these things where you clip your own heel and he fell over. It was absolutely unbelievable. Anyway, I've sent him the link to the UEFA highlights that's got that incident. Because I'm kind of learning a little bit. I'm no way an expert, but to me that would fall into the category of kind of a reckless challenge. And the reason for that is that as the ball comes across, it's perfectly reasonable for the goalkeeper to try and punch the ball away. The fact that it gets a deflection is unfortunate for him and Kyogo. And it's absolutely reasonable for Kyogo to be going to head the ball. Now, the reckless bit is obviously the fact that he clatters into him, so he's kind of, he's probably got not quite the right control at that point. But I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to do. I think he's trying to win the ball. It's unfortunate.
Okay, yeah. So it would fall under.
It looks horrible. And again, you're judging on the outcome, not what the actual incident is, and that's what you got to come to. What was the incident? So I think the referee is absolutely correct. If you look at the laws of the game, by my understanding, but I will get this verified, I thought it was the right decision.
Right, James, do you want to bring us through the numbers of the game before we move on to the conference stuff?
Yeah, so again, it depends on the XG model, but basically, if you back out the penalty, which again, we always talk about why you would do that, because of the material impact of a penalty kick, which again was extraordinary. I mean, both goals were real fun and great finishes and entertaining in that regard. But depending on the XG model, I mean, Celtic were kind of around, let's say, a half an XG. We really only had four non-penalty shots. Turnbull's late was really the only other one other than the two goals that was of a material threat. And that was off a really difficult finish, meaning that you know, trying to have a volley or half volley as Diaby showed. I mean, trying to finish those crosses that are kind of thigh high, that's not an easy thing to do, and actually get it past the keeper. And then as far as conceded, you know, it ranged between like 2.25 to 3, let's say, for Leverkusen, and they had 15 shots. So again, their average quality of chance was fairly high. And then some of the internals, like Alan said, as far as like pack passes, progressive passes, possession, How many times do we threaten their box, touch the ball in the box? I mean, one metric that I track with, again, Wyscout's deep completions, which is basically like a threatening pass around the opposition's box to put a more of a dangerous challenge. It doesn't necessarily result in a shot, but, you know, they had us that on, I think, about 5 or 6 to 1. I mean, we only had two of them in the game. And again, one of them was, I think, Ralston's there late. So yeah, it was actually 16-2 was that metric. So again, if I benchmark all these compared to other games, as I put in my thread today, it was, I'm not saying it was the same, but it was closer to the type of output that we would have against kind of an elite European level team when we were under Rodgers, than what I would characterize as, you know, like a really good performance. Now, there were aspects that were good. You know, obviously Hart had some great saves, although he had a really bad one too that went right between his legs. So naturally, if you look at his kind of what's that?
That's harsh.
Well, again, I looked at the metrics on this. So the post shot XG he faced was about 2.5, and we let 3 goals in. So, you know, again, he had some good things that he did, but one of the things that StatsBombs does is look at positioning before the shot and look at what they call positioning error. So, you know, where is he positioned relative to what would be optimal given the angle of the shooter and the goal mouth? So for example, that volley that Diaby scored off of, he was, you know, probably a few feet to his left farther than he should have been to be optimal. Right. So again, it looks like he shouldn't even have been close to that shot, which given his positioning, he shouldn't have been given the velocity of the shot. But had he been in a better position, kind of where he should have been, maybe he makes the save. So those are the kind of more advanced analytical tools that you can have. And, you know, so as Alan said, these are fine margins in one game. But overall, when I look at kind of an ensemble of these metrics, you know, we didn't have a lot of possession around their box. We didn't do a lot of threatening things around their box. They were bypassing our midfield, as Alan said, with regularity. I think probably the most alarming aspect is the disparity in athleticism between the two sides. And we've talked about that repeatedly since the start of the show. I mean, we're too small, we're too slow, and we don't have enough quickness. And at that level, I mean, you see guys like, I mean, you know, Frimpong, obviously we know well, but Diaby and Verts, and I mean, some of these guys that they have are just, they seem to be gliding on rails where our guys are, you know, trying really hard, but they just don't have that level of pace. And I think, you know, Beaton, as good of a game as he had, is an example of that. Even Forrest now, I mean, Forrest is a 30-year-old winger who's lost probably a step and a half. He's not going to have that kind of lightning speed to blow past people. And so, you know, we don't have that top end speed. We don't have those burst guys other than maybe Kyoko through the middle.
And look, that might change over the next couple of months and hopefully in the next year or so when the recruitment starts to pick up again under Ange. What this means is that Celtic are, again, out of the Europa League. They're into the Europa Conference. The potential opponents, Maccabi Tel Aviv, it could be Flora Tallinn, Partizan Belgrade, or Anorthosis Famagusta. That's the Group B.
Professional broadcaster, Enda. Listen, professional broadcaster. Getting that one out, man. Bravo.
Flora, I have seen before. They played against a League of Ireland side a couple of years ago. They're not that great. Bodø/Glimt or AS Roma, two very difficult fixtures that. Randers or Jablonec, we've already played Jablonec. Slavia Prague or Union Berlin, which would be a very interesting game, the Union Berlin one. It would be fun anyway, because I think the clubs have a sort of a link. Slovan Bratislava or PAOK from Greece, they played against Dundalk from the League of Ireland this year to actually get into the Europa Conference, and Dundalk actually almost won that tie. They could have been in the competition instead of them, so PAOK are not all that great. Vitesse or Spurs, you don't want to get Spurs, Basel or Karabag, and I would say, dare say, you don't want to get Karabag either. So is there anybody there that you would definitely not want to get, bar the likes of Spurs or, you know, AS Roma.
So I think Celtic have had a pretty bad run of draws in Europe. We keep getting tier, you know, that top tier, of, we call the sort of top five leagues, the ones that get four teams in the Champions League. That top five tier, which, you know, is largely defined by TV money income. Back to that. We seem to end up in groups with, even in the Europa League, groups with two of those such. Even when we're seated second, we end up with two, whereas other clubs don't play any, which is quite remarkable. So I think we have had a pretty poor run in that regard. It would be nice to play a non-tier one team. Whatever happens, and I'm excited for it, to be honest with you, I think, you know, if you've been brought up a lot, you know, older than you, Ender, and I've got a spreadsheet that shows, you know, European games over the years and post Jock Steen really stepping down, Celtic virtually never played European football after Christmas until the Martin O'Neill era and the structure of European football changed and the opportunities probably increased slightly. So for me, any football after Christmas, New Year, for Celtic, is a good thing, is a bonus. It's a bonus given all the structural issues that we've talked about. What I can say for absolute certainty is that Postecoglou will be telling those players that they can win that tournament. And that's the attitude. No, that's the attitude that you'll go into it with.
That was my follow-up question, I guess, James. Like, look, Spurs are going to be a different animal under Conte post-Christmas. They just will be. They'll be in much better shape. Roma, I don't know about whether they will be in a better shape in a couple of, well, or whether Mourinho will still even be there after Christmas. It's gone typical Mourinho off the last couple of years at Roma. Bodo Glimt are definitely a good side from what we've seen in the Conference League so far. But outside of that, is this tournament winnable for Celtic?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at just the resource basis, you name the two that would be the obvious candidates. Outside of that, I mean, you're getting down into kind of next tier that should be below us, the exact tier that we've had challenges with. They're around like the Copenhagens, the Michelin. So whether it's Sparta Prague, Bodo Glimt, these are teams that are outperforming in Europe relative to what the resources that they have. So they're very well run, but we have a lot more money than they do. And in theory, we should be doing better, you know, as we talked about earlier, in deploying those resources. So I think out of that next group, probably Bodo and Sparta and Vitesse are the ones that would be more problematic. I think Vitesse, you know, probably the third of those three. And then after that, I mean, yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if we get drawn against any of those other teams if, you know, we didn't go in heavy favorites and really should handle them. And that's even before, hopefully, we'll get a couple of material upgrades in the January window, whether it's Maeda or hopefully somebody in midfield we keep talking about. Damn you, Enda. But yeah, I mean, and get some fitness back, and maybe Julian's back by then, and Rogic is back, and, you know, Taylor's back, hopefully. So, you know, we could look a lot different come February 1 than we do now even. I mean, I think our current iteration, I would feel really confident outside of maybe three or four names where I would be, you know, I wouldn't be defeatist or be really, really concerned going, and I would just be more like coin flip type level. Whereas if we make those upgrades, I mean, we should be confident going in, hopefully.
Yeah, well, I say Spurs will be better post-Christmas. Celtic will be better post-Christmas as well, like based on the evidence that we've seen so far. So,
yeah, it's a huge gap, and Conte's a good manager.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I would say about Spurs is whether or not they will actually give a shit about this.
Well, that, right.
If they are competing for top four, that's the only bright spark that I can see. Will they play their B team because they didn't do anything in their group stages so far that would scare you, but if they actually want to win this competition, then they probably will and can win this competition for sure. Just before we finish up then, back in the league this week against Aberdeen at home, hopeful of another win in the league to put a bit of pressure under Rangers and their new management side. What do we think?
Go on, James, you go first.
Yeah, so I think we talked about this before. Aberdeen have some issues in open play. They're kind of a, you know, from a quality perspective, they've got some better players than, let's say, a Motherwell or a St. Johnston, but they've been suffering a lot of the same issues as those two sides have. And I think the big issue there is going to be whether or not we're able to limit their set piece opportunities. I think that's probably our biggest issue in that game. And then we talked about this before and after the prior fixture with them up in at Pittodrie, is they have some pretty good fullback play. And given how reliant our attack has become on Jota, you know, he struggled a little bit, relatively speaking. I mean, he still played well, but Ramsey's not, you know, your average SPFL level fullback. So if he's fit and playing, you know, that could be something that kind of nullifies, at least on the margin, where we have been getting some of our attacking output. So I could see it being relatively close. For me, it's the big question is what tactical setup do they have? Do they try and come at us a little bit, in which case we'll probably rip them apart in at least on a couple of occasions. Whereas if they play a little bit more cynical, defensive, narrow, and try to hit us on counter, you know, like a juiced up Livingston, if they go more pragmatic, I would be more concerned, because they do have a quality on set pieces that I think they could really be problematic there.
Mm-hmm. Alan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm interested you say that, because I just checked on their XG from set pieces is the fourth lowest in the league.
Yeah, they've been finishing, though. Ramirez is right. So Ramirez is, and even Brown and Ramirez have been quite good. So yeah, they've been outperforming their XG. So they could have some mean reversion, but yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But you know, they're not creating a lot. This is a big problem for them. Their XG, average XG in all games is like just touching one, and they're not underperforming that in overall play. So they've got a real issue there in creating chances and scoring goals. And then at the other end, they're kind of they're not losing a lot of chances, but they are conceding probably more goals than they should. And if you look at they've shifted shapes and they've shifted systems quite a bit over the games. The last three games, they've gone with the three at the back with Brown dropping in as a centre back, and that's obviously going to take a bit of time to settle in. I think Ramsey's missed a few of the games. I think he's been injured, hasn't he? I don't know if he's fit for this game.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, just real quick.
Somebody
on the
in the comments saying he's still out.
Okay, well, that's good then. Okay. Well, ignore everything I said on that.
Yeah, no, Ojo, who has been playing, he got sent off in the last game, so I presume he'll miss. And actually, Ferguson missed the last game. I don't know if that was a suspension, because he gets booked pretty much every other game, or whether he's injured as well. So, but even so, if he's scared of Ferguson, then we should back up and go home, to be honest with you. But they seem to me to be a team really struggling to find a coherent way of playing with the parts that they have, really quite badly. So I would be quite confident. But I think we're entering now where we're going to be playing. How many games is it? 11 games between now and the end of the year, maybe. And the obvious risks associated with that in terms of personnel, tiredness. I mean, Jota, for example, it's not even a case of injury. It's a case of, I can't remember which game it was, where Turnbull was absolutely outstanding, and then the next game he could barely run. He barely got anything out of him. Jota against St. Johnson, you know, some of his numbers were insane, you know, best player on the park. And then he was very peripheral. I know he scored a great goal, but other than that, he barely got on the ball, but it was very peripheral. And he's somebody who his one of his super strengths is getting on the ball, as I've said before. So yeah, that those are my concerns. But in terms of this actual game, they look a bit of a mess to me in terms of how they're trying to play.
Well, let's hope so, and let's hope that Celtic can continue their winning ways in the league. That is us done here on the Huddle Breakdown for another week. If you want to listen back to this podcast, it'll be on Spotify and on iTunes and anywhere you get your podcast as well. And we'll tweet it out from our Twitter account, which is at Huddle Breakdown on Twitter, if you want to follow us. And if you're watching on YouTube, do hit the subscribe button below as well, because there's loads of different stuff on this channel, all Celtic related, and you can get them every single week. If you hit the notification bar, it will give you a notification every time a video goes live. James, Alan, thanks very much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll chat to you next week. Good luck.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.